Good afternoon, a happy Monday to you. It is Monday, April 14th in the year of our Lord, 2025. Another beautiful, sunny, blue sky out there. Well, it's got some clouds in it, but it's generally, it feels blue. I hope you had a great time at the French Quarter Festival or the Strawberry Festival insofar as you were able to do before both of those events were marred by gun violence. Not great. Also not terribly shocking, maybe shocking, but not surprising. We'll be talking about all of that in the 2 o'clock hour. Five people shot in the French Quarter. Three people hurt in two separate shootings at the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival. Not the headlines, the organizers of those events or the elected officials and law enforcement folks in those communities want to hear. Have we become desensitized to this kind of violence? Is there even anything to be done about it? You know, it's like, it seems clear to me, and this may turn out not to be the case, but this seems like both of these incidents at the Strawberry Festival and the French Quarter Festival, they're not an act of terror, right? They're not a mass shooting event where someone goes in and says, I'm going to try and hurt or kill as many people as I can. It just seems like morons shooting at each other, you know, hitting each other occasionally, but also hitting other people. Is there anything to be done about it? Were you at either one of those festivals? What did you feel? What did you think about when you heard about the shootings? Did it make you want to run home? Did it make you think, just another day in paradise, I guess? In the 2 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to Pike Howard, who's going to come back to WWL. He's the owner of Felipe's Taqueria. When I learned about the location of the French Quarter shooting, I said, damn, that's pretty close to the Felipe's down there. Felipe's is one of my favorite French Quarter restaurants. Great, great people, great food. It's not very expensive. It's fast, casual Mexican. I'm eating there several times a month. Get some cheap margaritas once a week. And they had a pretty tough run back in 2022. Again, we'll talk more about this in the 2 o'clock hour. But as soon as I knew where that shooting in the French Quarter was, I knew I wanted to get Pike Howard back on the show so he could give us his perspective on it. On the violence that happened at the French Quarter Festival. But of course, I'd like to talk to you as well. If you think that there's some policy, something that law enforcement agents could do, or some sort of law that we could pass, or something that we could, spark like a cultural movement to encourage young people to, hey man, leave the gun at home. If you got a beef, you know, find a different way to settle it. Love to hear from you about that. In the 3 o'clock hour, LSU baseball kind of limped home from Auburn this weekend, but there's a handful of games yet still to be played in Baton Rouge on their home turf. I don't have to tell you, LSU baseball is insanely popular here with WWL's audience. How many of us have never actually made the pilgrimage to Alex Box to see the Tigers in person? I have wanted to do this for a couple years now. I have seen an LSU football game or two, always a good time there, but I've never made it out to the baseball diamond. And I'm really trying to get that done this year. I think in a couple weeks, I think when they play the Razorbacks, I'm going to try and get up there and maybe spend a night in Baton Rouge. How do you get tickets? Where do you park? Where do you eat after the game? Where's the best place in the stadium to sit? These are the questions I have, and maybe you have them too. Maybe you've been to a million LSU baseball games and you think, I already know all this, but I bet a lot of people are in the same situation that I am. They love the Tigers. They love to hear that they're winning. They love to listen to the games on the radio, but maybe have never actually made it there to watch these young men play. We'll be talking to LSU baseball communications director and the public address announcer at Alex Box Stadium, Bill Franquez. He'll fill us in. If you have been to see the Tigers play in person before, what do you recommend for somebody who's going for the first time? How do you describe the experience of watching LSU baseball? How does it differ from watching other baseball teams? I'm thinking like Major League Baseball. I've been to a bunch of Major League Baseball games before. Most recently, I was at I went to go see the Red Sox play in Boston last October. It was great. I had a great time. I loved watching the game. I loved eating the hot dogs and drinking Sam Adams and swinging. You know, they sing Sweet Caroline and all that. It's delightful. So we'll talk to Bill in the 3 o'clock hour about that. You've already heard in the news, we shot Katy Perry and Gayle King into space today. They both came back, thankfully. But what do you think about this growing trend of celebrities and, you know, the wealthiest individuals among us taking these space flights? Is that inspiring or does it seem excessive to you? You remember when those billionaires went down in that little boat to look at the Titanic and their little boat got crunched up? And it's a tragedy. It's a sad story. There are those of us walking among us who took that opportunity to kind of gloat and say, well, these billionaires are always kind of doing these exceedingly excessive, expensive experiences that the rest of us will never get a chance to do. So when you see Katy Perry and Gayle King go into space and come back in the span of 11 minutes, does that do anything for you? Does that spin your bow tie? Does that make you want to go into space? Does that get your kid interested in learning more about space flight? I hope so. I mean, it's their money. If they want to go into space, they can go into space. We're not going to stop them from going if they want to go. So we'll learn more about this, about space tourism, fledgling industry. Now we're going to visit with Adam Frank, who's a professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester and author of a book called The Little Book of Aliens, which I am interested to learn about. So it's going to be a great show. I will also remind you, we have kind of moved into a new phase with the Jazz Fest ticket giveaway. We're now doing a listen and win contest. So you need to listen weekdays at 9 a.m., noon, 3, and 6. And at each one of those times, in each of those hours, we'll give out the Jazz Fest code word of the day. Once you got the code word in hand, you just go to wwl.com/contests and register to win. You type in your email address, you hit submit, you tell it what the code word is, and then you're off to the races. It pops up a little thing, says, thank you for your submission. We'll email you if you won. So, you know, go and do that. After I give out the code word at 3 o'clock, it really only takes about 20 seconds. It's an extremely fast process. Go and do that after I give out the word at 3 o'clock. You can win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Experience the music, food, and culture of New Orleans and Louisiana. Happy festing from Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. And WWL. Sorry to learn this morning of the passing of longtime WWL news anchor David Blake. Anyone who works here and got an opportunity to work alongside David would tell you just what a sweet, caring, capable man he was. He passed away at age 71 over the weekend. We got a great write-up on our website. If David Blake was a part of your mornings for years in a row, you may enjoy going to our website and reading a little bit about his life and where he came from and how he ended up at WWL and all the different people that he worked with, and our thoughts and prayers with his family at this time. What else? Oh, yeah, I did get to go to French Quarter Fest on Sunday afternoon, and I did get my crawfish at the U.S. Mint stage, the Esplanade in the Shade stage, where I got to see the Astral Project. This is a jazz band that I like. I've been doing this for, like, I don't know, I'm going to say 15 years now, where I always finish up French Quarter Fest watching the same band on the same stage, eating the same thing. I got 5 pounds of crawfish with fixins for $30, which I thought was a pretty good price. Split that with some of my friends, had a couple of purple hazes. Purple's haze, I guess you could say. Grateful to get that done. If you had a great experience at French Quarter Fest or Strawberry Festival, yeah, get in here. Tell us all about it, man. Also, we've never spoken about James Lee Burke on this program, but James Lee Burke is an author who has written 24 books about a fictional cop named Dave Robichaud, who is a member of the Iberia Parish Sheriffs. He lives in New Iberia. He's a sheriff's out there, a sheriff's deputy out there. Anyway, it's this series of books about this cop, Dave Robichaud. He used to be on NOPD, and then he moved out to New Iberia. And these are just great books. And I just finished one last night, and I just thought, hey, you know, maybe I'll talk about that on the air tomorrow. If you've picked up any James Lee Burke's books, I really like these. I really like them. They're, very well written. They're good, interesting crime, you know, kind of whodunit novels. But then another thing I like about it is they're all set in Southeast Louisiana. They're bouncing around between New Orleans and New Iberia, places in between. A lot of action happens in Lafayette in these books. And it's just really fun to read about these characters moving around in these spaces, these communities, and think, I know exactly where that is. Or I have also been to that restaurant, or I know exactly where that highway is. So strongly recommend if you're looking for something to read, go get you a James Lee Burke book. This man is 88 years old. I did not clock until this morning how old Mr. Burke is. He's 88 years old, and his most recent book, I think, was just published last year. So he's still at it. Go pick up a Dave Robichaux novel by James Lee Burke. You won't be sorry. Let's say hello to Coleman in the jar. Good afternoon, my guy.
I want you to follow this logic and see if it's sound.
Take me.
So obviously I cannot afford to go to space, yeah. Although I may want to, right?
Right.
I can't afford to go to the bottom of the Marianas Trench or anything like that. But I'm thinking, maybe if I pass away, I could convince the people who's in charge of the afterlife to let me come back and haunt a house. But instead of haunting the house, I would just go travel. Like, I'd be able to see all the stuff that I couldn't see while I was alive. And think about it. I can go to the bottom of the Marianas Trench without any apparatus because I can't drown. I'm already dead, right? So okay. I get to go see all the stuff that I couldn't see while I was alive. And I can, like, go to the surface of the sun because I can't burn up. I'm already dead. So I get to walk.
You're a ghost.
Right.
You're
so a space ghost. I can literally go anywhere and don't have to worry about travel expenses, don't have to worry about dying or getting too old because I'm already dead. You know, go haunt the moon of Jupiter.
That is really interesting.
Think
that'll
work?
If you die and go to heaven and they say, hey, yeah, you can go back to Earth and haunt as a ghost, which I don't know. Do they let you do that? I mean, if you want to go back down as an angel or something, I think there's a process for that. I don't know what the screening is like.
Yeah, but I'll suck at being a guardian angel.
You're not giving yourself enough credit, Coleman. You'd be a great guardian angel. I know that. I think you'd also be a good ghost because you're kind of mischievous, you know. You'd cause problems for people. You don't need to move stuff around, you know, floating books through the air and stacking up pots and pans.
Yeah, but I think haunting houses and mansions is too clear. I want a challenge. I want to haunt like a tour bus or something. You know, like make them go take a wrong turn. Or maybe hunt like Willie Nelson's tour bus and maybe think and see if he thinks it's actually a ghost or is he just on the good stuff.
Oh, he's just on that good. Wow. Yeah. This sounds great. This really does sound kind of like heaven. That you get to travel wherever you want and, you know, money is no object. Whether or not you'd burn up or be crushed by atmospheric pressure, that is also no object.
Exactly.
That's
does it make,
great.
Does it make it. Any kind of sense or any logical level?
I think it's feasible. Brother, after you leave this earthly plane, you shuffle off your mortal coil, whatever you think is coming your way. You know, if you live an upright and moral life, you know, and you think that's going to get you an opportunity to go haunt the, you know, Marianas Trench, you just go for it. My guy, that's great. Listen, I did, but I know we got to step away here in a minute, but I was listening to what Katy Perry and Gayle King and the other women on that space flight. We'll get to that in a minute. What they had to say after they got back from space. And I'm listening to this audio and I'm like, you know, this is not that. As they're saying like, oh, it's so inspiring. Oh, it's very quiet. Yeah, we've been knowing that. It's inspiring and quiet in space. You're going to tell us something we don't already know? No disrespect to Miss King and to Katy Perry, but I came up with a list of five other celebrities I think would be more interesting to shoot into space and hear what they have to say. Ready?
Sure.
Number one, Pauly Shore.
Whoa.
Right? I think the Biodome guy.
Yeah.
Son-in-law, Jerry Duty. I would love to have him walk down off the gangplank and you know, illuminate all of us with whatever he had to say about his time in space. Another good one, Gary Busey.
Yeah, all right.
He's going to be very enthusiastic about his space flight. Going to look a little disheveled, but I think would also have some interesting comments for us. A third one I might like to send into space, Kanye.
He's already in space.
You ain't telling no lie. Okay, number four, Nick Cage. You know he's going to be super intense about it. He's an eccentric fella. He's got a way with words. He's got a special sort of energy about him. That'd be cool. And then the fifth one that I would like to see shot into space and returned so we could hear what they had to say about it, Cardi B.
Oh, you know what? I was thinking about this, about dreaming, and I'm thinking if we're going to send a celebrity into space, I would love to see, like, what would Stevie Wonder think about the experience? No, seriously. Like, okay. he can't see the planet or the Earth, right. But I wonder what his experience would be, like, experiencing, like, the weightlessness and, like, what would a blind person's experience be like? I am in space, because we always get it from the people that can see. They always say it looks beautiful.
Truly.
But what would a blind person think about the experience of being in weightlessness? Like, how would they feel and how would they describe it?
I'm glad we're talking about this, Coleman. That is a very thoughtful comment. If you also want to get in on this, maybe tell us what celebrities you want to see shot in space and safely returned. I think we can all think of a million people we'd like to see shot into space on a one-way trip. But we're talking about people that go to space and then come back and tell us what they thought. I will read 100% of the text messages you send to me today at 504-260-1870. I'll reply to as many as I can, and I'll read the very best ones on the air. That's the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line. Anytime you want to get in touch today, shoot me a text, give me a call. I'll try and get you in as quickly as possible. I hate making people wait, so be assured if you call in, I'm going to try and get to you as quickly as possible. Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this with Adam Frank. Today, Blue Origin, that's Jeff Bezos' space company, launched its 11th human flight, an 11-minute trip to the edge of space with an all-female crew made up of celebrities and science advocates, including pop star Katy Perry, journalist Gayle King, civil rights activist Amanda Nguyen, aerospace engineer Aisha Bowe, filmmaker Carrie-Anne Flynn, and Bezos' fiancée, Lauren Sanchez. Joining us now is professor of astrophysics, Adam Frank, here to talk about what this flight means for the future of space tourism and whether any of it should really be called space travel at all. Professor, welcome to the show. Thanks for making time today.
It's a pleasure.
Is this really space? Pretty low orbit, suborbital flight, right? Only 11 minutes. Does that really count? Isn't this the kind of thing that they use to film zero gravity in Hollywood movies? Isn't this kind of routine at this point?
No, actually, this is still high enough that jet fighters can't, or jet travel can't get to by quite a bit. So, this is what they reached past what's called the von Karman line, which is definitely an arbitrary scientific designation of where space begins. The von Karman line is where you have, when you're thinking about how to control a vehicle, you stop worrying about atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. But it still is, these kinds of what we call suborbital flights are still the entryway into space. It's what in the early 1960s, the first astronauts and cosmonauts, when they did these kinds of flights, these were considered to be getting into space, getting to be the stepping stone to orbital flight. So I think it's okay to call this getting into space. Right. I don't have a problem with it.
Okay, cool. If you don't, then I don't. So other than the sort of PR value of this, what does a suborbital flight like this actually show us about space? What can we learn from flights like this?
I don't think there's really much to learn anymore about this. As you said, it's becoming routine, which is fantastic, right? We've actually passed the point where, every time we put something into space or into orbit, we've got to be like, what incredible new things have we learned? It's like, it used to be that if you flew in a jet at 5 miles above the ground, there was a huge amount of science to be done. Now you just play video games or watch a movie, right? That's the way we progressed. So what's really happening here is you're seeing the beginning of the commercial use of space. In this case, it's still kind of a stunt, sending Katy Perry into space. Mm-hmm. But what it shows is that, in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, if we make it, right, if humanity manages to still be around and civilization is still intact, then, we could have a viable human presence in space where everybody could go.
Do you see value in sending celebrities into space? If this was an all-female crew of only scientists or only engineers, we probably wouldn't be talking about it quite as much, right? Can a journey like this with a crew like this actually help inspire people to care about science?
Well, yes, I think it does. I mean, it's certainly helpful to have that kind of visibility to make people understand what's happening. It's really not about science anymore. Really what this is about this sort of transition that humanity is taking. Again, if we can survive, we are actually right now, I have to say, American science, it's not clear that America is going to be able to do this in 30 years if we keep the way that we're going, eliminating American science. But, you know, assuming that we do, then, like I said, this is the beginning of humanity sort of using space in a day-to-day fashion, the way, you know, jet travel is not a big deal. And that would be a significant transition, because it wouldn't just be Earth orbit. We'd start to talk about living on the moon. We'd start to talk about people living, you know, on Mars. Or, you know, in 300 years, it's not hard to imagine having millions, hundreds of millions of people living on other parts, in other parts of the solar system.
Yeah. Cool, cool, cool. We heard that Oprah, who is very close to Gayle King, Oprah was moved to tears. She cried during the launch. Why do you think people have such emotional reactions to space travel?
Well, I think the essential thing about space travel comes down to this thing called the overview effect, that, you know, once you get into space, what you realize is, you know, you look down, you don't see little lines drawn on the planet of like, oh, this is that guy's country, and that's the other guy's country, you know? Like, the right. planet is a whole, and, you know, these distinctions that human beings make and then, you know, beat the pants off each other over are completely arbitrary and make no sense. And, you know, ultimately, right? And so you recognize that, like, the Earth is this jewel hanging in space, that it is unlike any other planet we've ever found. And for a moment, you get past your kind of petty, partisan sort of, you know, biases and prejudices, and you realize that you're just, you know, an inhabitant. You're an animal that has evolved on this planet, that is part of this planet, and that the planet is much more than you are.
Yeah, I love that idea, that it is actually possible to physically, maybe even geographically is maybe the word to use, escape the condition where we're always sorting ourselves by our disagreements, where it's religion or politics or race or ethnicity or sexuality or gender expression, whatever. None of that matters when you're in space. If all, what are there, 7-8 billion of us now? If all 8 billion of us just all went into space one afternoon and came back, what a different world we would find waiting for us.
I think that's really what it is. There's the what space travel offers is this overview that lifts us out of our kind of petty day-to-day concerns. And we recognize two things. One, that, as you said, the distinctions between us are, you know, minuscule compared to our commonality, which is we're all inhabitants briefly of this planet. And then the second thing is that the planet itself is this amazing, powerful entity, thing that, you know, we mess with at our own peril. You know, you really see the planet as being something way more than just this place for us to muck around on, and that, you know, you don't want to actually put its ability to protect human civilization in danger.
Professor, last week on the program here, we had a couple great conversations about moments where people have experienced the sublime. Whether that was, yes. you know, the birth of their child, or,
yes.
you know, being at their parents' bedside when they slipped away, or also, and it could be something more beautiful or awe-inspiring or terrifying. And I'm reading this morning about what some people call the overview effect,
right.
Where that can you just explain to us what that is in your words and how that can tie into people experiencing the sublime?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the sublime. That's what, you know, my experience of science has always been an experience of the sublime. You know, the sublime is the sense of unity, of there being more, you know, however you want to define more. If you're religious, then you'll define more within your, that more in your own tradition. And, you know, if you're not religious, you find it in other ways. But it's that sense that, that you are connected on some profound level to something so much more than just your petty day-to-day concerns. And the overview effect is that thing that that astronauts describe when they look down on the planet. It's an experience of the sublime, of the spiritual, and I'm a scientist who has no problem using that word, of the spiritual, that you know, there's this, you are just much more than, you know, your story, right? You are part of something much larger. And space, you know, the reason I became an astronomer was the experience of the sublime I had as a kid looking out at the night sky.
If you have a question for my guest, Professor Adam Frank, you can shoot it to me on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking text line. We'll try and get some of those answered before we step away. Did you see Contact with Jodie Foster and all them back?
Oh my God, yeah.
So
many
good.
Times.
Yeah, me too. It's one of my absolute favorite films, and it'll never ever cease to touch me. That moment where she's on the journey and she sees the swirling cosmic galaxy when she's traveling to Vega, and she's speechless, and she says it's so beautiful. They should have sent a poet.
Right.
That's
right.
The overview effect, then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, you know, what's a bummer is these days to see the night sky, really to see it, you got to drive 50 miles out of a city. But, you know, it used to be available to all of us every night. I mean, the Milky Way used to be visible, you know, in Paris in 1200. You know, you can be, because wow. Nobody had anything more than fire, torches, right?
Yeah.
So it used to be that the vividness of the night sky, which now we only get when we're like camping deep in the woods, that was there every night, and it really blew people away. You recognized, you could just feel the strangeness of the night sky.
Professor Gail King said that she, quote, cannot call herself an astronaut. Who gets to be called an astronaut?
Oh, anybody. I mean, that's fine that she wants to say that. But, you know, I think at some point, anybody who goes into space, who, you know, who's an astronaut, who's not an astronaut, I think that's an arbitrary label. I mean, there are certainly the heroes, so to speak, who, you know, will go out, will explore the frontiers of space. And, you know, maybe we want to have a special name for those, you know, the first person who lands on Mars, the people, you know, the first group that lands on the moon and builds a colony or a settlement. I mean, so there's certainly a huge amount of heroism that goes into being the first ones or pushing the limits of human endurance in space. But, you know, like I said, I think these are just labels. Who's an astronaut? Who's not an astronaut? Where exactly the boundaries of space are? Those are labels that are kind of fun to argue over, but in the end, they're not all that meaningful.
Here's a text that says, what would working in space look like? Mining or building?
Yeah, well, let's talk about mining. So, you know, one idea that people have had for a while is that we have these asteroids that are floating around out in space. There's, you know, these are basically construction debris left over from the assembly of the planets billions of years ago. And some of them have more, like, say, platinum in them than is, you know, on Earth almost. That's not quite true. But, you know, there's trillions of dollars in platinum on them. So, you know, the idea of mining these asteroids is something that people have even begun to investigate and think about putting money into. So, you know, being a miner in space, you'd probably, you know, live on some kind of orbiting space platform. And then you would, you know, travel out to these asteroids. You'd meet up with one of the asteroids in orbit and then, you know, do the work literally of attaching yourself to it and grinding out rock and then processing the rock. It would look very much like, you know, like mining on Earth, only obviously weightless.
Yeah.
Etc. But there's lots of other jobs as well. There'd be lots of other things to do in space in another 300 years. Even 100 years, there'll be jobs in space.
I like the idea of there being a radio host in space because, man, a pretty small transmitter is going to throw a big footprint, right? I mean, you can go out for a long, long time. Great. We'll take a break in just a second here, Professor Frank. But what you said about, you know, when you get up into space, you look down, you don't see the borders between countries. You don't see red states and blue states. Here's a text message that says, I love this topic, but also tongue in cheek. Wait a minute. Red states aren't actually red? And I thought, well, maybe Utah would be close. I don't know. Stick around just 1 minute. Professor Frank is a professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester and author of The Little Book of Aliens, which I cannot forget to ask him about when we come back. I'm Ian Hoke sitting in for Scoot on WWL. Be right back after this. Adam Frank is on the line with us. Professor Frank, here is a text message that says, where'd it go? Oh, this is from Sparky. Hi, Sparky. Sparky is asking, is it true that Mars doesn't have a magnetic field to protect it from solar radiation? Would this prevent colonization?
Yes, that is, he's absolutely right. Sparky's right. Way to go, Sparky.
Good job, Sparky.
And it's true that the Mars does not have a magnetic field. We can talk about why it doesn't have one. And it barely has an atmosphere. It's got an atmosphere, but it's like a hundredth of the amount of air that we have. And that means that Mars is a very inhospitable place. So the idea that like people like Elon Musk have, that we're going to colonize Mars and have a vibrant human civilization on Mars, is kind of pushing it. That's probably not going to be possible for a very long time. But it doesn't mean that we can't have settlements on Mars, and that maybe, you know, like I said, over a few centuries, we might figure out how to, like, underground have, you know, large human presence on Mars. So, but right now, yeah, really, you could not build something on the surface of Mars that would allow you to live, you know, free from the radiation exposure from the sun.
I kind of like the vision of Mars that Ray Bradbury laid out in the Martian Chronicles, right? Which he was writing in like 1949. I mean, just like early space age. And his vision of Mars is that it's mostly populated by just tall humans. Like the Martians are just tall people, and they have houses and they have children and families and barbecues. Here's a text that says, how flat is the Earth, and can you see the flatness from outer space?
Yes, how shall we answer that? The funniest part is whoever wrote that, you know, used a high performance piece of scientific equipment. Probably the message might have even been bounced off a satellite and back down.
Indeed.
So yeah, so that pretty much answers that question about the flat Earth.
You're right. We don't have to dwell on it, but I thought it was funny.
No,
okay, great.
That is funny.
Back to business. Are we in danger of turning space travel into something that is only available for the ultra wealthy? Or is this just kind of a necessary step on the way to broader access for just regular people?
That's a good question. I think right now it's not that we're in danger. Already, that's what it is. Like at this point,
sure,
you know,
that's fair. Yeah,
there, space tourism is just beginning, and in the beginning, it is absolutely, positively only going to be for really rich people. Like working class folks are just not going to be able to take that trip. But you know, in time, that was probably the way it was with air travel in the beginning as well. You had to be fairly wealthy to be able to travel. And you know, the hope would be, I think, and the expectation will be that over time, especially as there starts to become jobs up there, that space will become accessible to all kinds of people. I mean, I think we have to be very careful about billionaires, you know, as we've seen, and billionaires sort of deciding for themselves how they want society to be organized. But I do believe that in the beginning, this is a necessary first step to the commercialization of space, which I'm very much in favor of.
I wonder, let's see, where did they landed somewhere in West Texas. I as much as I read about this story this morning, I don't know where they took off and landed from. Do you?
Actually, I don't know where. Huh. I thought the launch facilities were in California, but I may be wrong about that.
Okay.
You know, does.
Sorry, I see it here. Yeah, it's Bezos has a private ranch in West Texas known as Launch Site 1. So they took off and landed in sort of the same space. But look, the reason I asked is I wanted to know, you know, is this the kind of flight that could be useful, not for just tourism or PR stunt, but for travel? Like if I wanted to go to, you know, Paris, France in 11 minutes. Could I do that just by going up in this kind of capsule and just taking kind of a wider arc than they took this morning?
Well, there are ideas for that. Hypersonic travel, they call it. The idea of, you know, sort of, you know, rather than, you know, getting up to the stratosphere, which is like 5 miles or so. You know, right now, pretty much when you fly in an airplane, you're flying at 5 miles above the ground, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. But that's not really much higher, or that's about the same height as Mount Everest, right? Mm. But if you could actually do this kind of arc, if you could get into suborbital space and come back down, you could have, like you said, it would be only, you know, 20 minutes to get to Paris or something.
Yeah.
So that is definitely something that people are thinking about. There are environmental problems with that. Because every time you do that, you're kind of punching a hole in the atmosphere, and that can actually lead to some problems perhaps for the ozone layer.
Oh,
so
no.
We're not really sure. Yes. Well, you know, in general, air travel is pretty bad for the atmosphere, right? We know that it's a major contributor to climate change.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of other things that, you know, so, you know, this is the thing. If you want to have a giant, powerful human technological civilization, you just have to pay attention to the side effects. There's got to be side effects on the planet. So that's something we need to learn how to manage.
Man, everything's always got side effects. You know, life would be so much easier if stuff just didn't do that. I got three more questions for you, and we're kind of running out of time, Professor, so I want to go quickly. Going back to Mars, the audience does want you to briefly explain, why is sun radiation on Mars life prohibitive, but Mars is farther away from the sun than Earth is?
That's a great question. Wow, you got a smart audience.
I sure do.
The solar radiation that's being blown off the surface of the sun, even though Mars is further away, there's still enough of it that it would be harmful for life. In fact, almost anywhere you go in the solar system, there's still enough what we call ionizing radiation, radiation that can just like punch right through your body and start to cause mutations, you know, that could give cancer anywhere. The reason we don't have to worry about it on Earth is we've got this beautiful atmosphere and an ozone layer and a magnetic field, which all protect us from it.
And Mars has almost none of those things.
It has no magnetic field and it's got almost no atmosphere.
A tiny, tiny atmosphere. Okay. What's your favorite space movie?
Oh, my God. So many. I don't even know where to begin. It's not fair. Everybody should watch the show The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
Right.
It's Game of Thrones in space.
What?
And it takes place about 300 years from now. And it's really a beautiful, scientifically accurate vision of what a settled solar system would look like. And it's got great space battles.
You had me at Game of Thrones in space. Okay, great. And just lastly, Professor, and take your time, I'll give you some runway with this. Tell us about your book, The Little Book of Aliens. What's in there?
Yeah, well, listen, everybody, the book starts off with the fact that everybody loves aliens, right? That's the first line, because everybody does love aliens. And what I wanted to give people is a view into how close scientifically we are to being able to find whether or not there's life on other planets or not. Like in the next 10, 20, 30 years, we are going to have data from telescopes that will tell us whether or not other planets might have other life. And so I wanted to show people, this is a field called astrobiology. Yeah. I wanted people to see how close they're getting. And I also talk about UFOs and UAPs, and I tried to give people like the real science, not the hype, because there's so much hype, about what we know and what we don't know and what we might know.
Well, I hope that when we know it, we send Jodie Foster and not Katy Perry. But that's that's just me. Thanks for spending time with us today, Professor Frank. It was a great conversation. We'll be looking out for your book, The Little Book of Aliens. And we'll keep you in the Rolodex, man. Nice speaking with you today.
It was good talking with you, too. Take care.
Adam Frank is a professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester and author of The Little Book of Aliens. Might have a chance to read one or two text messages, maybe even take a call before we hand it off to Chris Miller in the 2 o'clock news. At 2:10, we'll do the news bomb. A lot to talk about there today in national and international headlines, political and otherwise. At 2:20, we'll talk to Pike Howard, who's the owner of Felipe's Taqueria, about the shooting after the French Quarter Festival. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. Be right back after this. Would you go into space if somebody offered you a free ticket? Yes or no? I think I would go. Coleman, would you go into space for free?
Definitely.
Right? I mean, it's like, I sometimes think about, would I go skydiving? Which is interesting to me. I've never kind of put it together. But if somebody just straight up rolled in here and said, hey, man, you can come skydiving with us, it'll be free, I would go. I would go in a heartbeat.
If we're skydiving over water, I'd be more inclined to do it. Just in case.
You're still going to die if you hit the ground or if you hit the water.
I could do one of those marine-style dives where you cross
man.
Your hands over your chest.
Just dive into the water. If you're at terminal velocity plummeting towards the Earth with no parachute or anything, you can't just dive into the water
and then swim away.
I'll
skydive if they give me one of those squirrel suits. That way, if the parachute flops, I can still spread like the flying squirrel.
With the wings. I thought you were talking about like Super Mario where he turns into the squirrel. He's got the little squirrel suit.
Not a kabuki suit.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you very much. Does what happened this morning make you more or less interested in space travel? I've also asked, who's one celebrity that you'd like to send into space and have come back safely? That is the qualifier. You can't just say, I don't like Kathy Griffin, so I want to shoot her into space. I want someone to go to space and then come back and give us a really interesting perspective on it. Here's a text that says the movie The Martian gets two things wrong. Number one, their atmosphere can't generate the winds depicted that caused the accident. And number two, the soil is toxic. So growing potatoes isn't possible without the heavy treatment of the soil. I remember thinking during that movie when Matt Damon's growing those potatoes, it's like, I'm not eating those potatoes. Those potatoes are going to be nasty. Here's Chris Miller with the news. Don't change that station.